morning, everyone. I hope you all are doing well. Weather's gotten warmer, but it's not all that much drier the last couple of days. A little humid, but it's looking a little prettier today, so maybe it will turn out nicely. Okay, we started in Hebrews chapter 11 as we were finishing up last time. We started off by looking at a definition of faith. What faith is? Faith is that trust, that complete confidence or assurance that what we things that we can't yet see, things that we're hoping to happen, such as our home in heaven, to see God, or maybe even things that we that have already happened that we can't see. But the fact that we're so sure about that we'd be willing to do whatever it takes to get to obtain that. You need a lesson, don't
we? Yes, please.
I'm looking.
Chapter 11.
I don't know if I see.
I don't have room 11.
I don't think we had
it. Okay, I believe I printed out through 10. I'm sorry,
okay,
folks.
Yeah, we have through 10.
Okay. All right. All right,
yeah,
sorry. Okay.
I was thinking we were on the ones in this.
Okay. All right, sorry about that. I guess I wasn't thinking as much about that since we don't ever seem to get to the question. I guess we do answer the question. We just do it as we go through the chapter. But we talked about what faith is. Faith is that total confidence and belief in things that God has promised us, or things that He told us about in His Word, maybe such as the fact that He created the world, that we're so sure that it's just like we can see heaven now, we can see the finish of our life, and those things are concrete, even though they haven't even happened yet. And then it started talking about some people that were examples who displayed this type of faith. And we talked about Abel, who offered the more excellent sacrifice than his brother Cain. We talked about Enoch, who was taken up to heaven without seeing death because he pleased God. That was a special thing that God did for him. And then we finished up with verse 6, where we talked about how important faith is. How important is faith? What can we not do if we don't have faith?
We cannot
please God. You can give all the money you want to people. You can do all of the kindnesses you can think to show to the world and to your neighbors and to friends. But if we have no faith in God, it means nothing. Okay? And what else besides that? We have to have faith in God. And what do we have to believe about Him? That He is willing to do what?
He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him.
Okay. Being pointed out, two things. He kind of divided that into two things. He said, we've got to believe God's a rewarder. He said, lots of people believe God's a rewarder. You know, you've been to the funerals and everybody's going to heaven. Everybody thinks God is a rewarder. But not everyone believes that God is a rewarder of only those who seek Him, those who trust Him, those who obey Him. And that is hopefully what we are. That's what we seek to do as we study His Word and as we find out about it and try to obey it. Okay, Jeff, would you offer us a prayer, please? Let's go on to let's read verse 7 and talk about that and kind of see if we can get move toward the end of chapter 11 if we don't finish it today. Let's see, Melton, would you read just verse 7, please?
By faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith.
Okay, Genesis chapter 6 is where that event happened. It said that God warned him about some things that were yet unseen. What were some things about that Noah was warned about that had not yet come about?
Rain.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about that. But the world had been watered through a mist coming up out of the ground before this. And so we don't have any indication that there's ever even any rain. So he has been told about a flood that's going to come and destroy the world. And so that's going to include not just something he's never seen in rain, but then obviously a flood has never happened if it's not rained. And I don't even know if there were even boats around at this time. There could have been. So I'm not sure man had even designed and built a boat. This may have been the first boat that traveled on water. So it could be several things. But he was warned by God about things that were going to happen. And so because of that, he was willing to spend,
100 years.
Well, I was trying to think his life. I believe it was like 120 years.
He spent 120 years, I believe.
Was it 120? I couldn't remember if it was 100 or 120. But he built the ark and spent the time preaching to the world and telling them they needed to repent. After all that work, only his household of eight souls were saved. But it's kind of like, you think of this as a little bit like converting the Christian. You know, he heard what God said. He believed it enough that it caused him to fear, and that fear caused him to go to action and to do what it was that God commanded him. And that is what faith is all about.
Faith includes the action.
It does.
It's not just a mental asset to something.
That's exactly right. It is not just... Faith does include believing. That is part of faith, but that's not the entirety of faith. And, God says we have to have that working faith, that display of faith that he's... That's what he's showing us. All of these people that he trusted and or that he accepted as faithful, they did something. That's something that we'll see through all of these as we read in chapter 11. What about it talks about this faith of Noah caused him to be able to save his household. But in something else it says that he did is he condemned the world and became the heir of righteousness that comes by faith. His actions, being righteous, were in a sharp contrast to all of those around him. All the rest of the people were unfaithful and unholy people. And so in that way, he condemned the world by what he did. It showed their evil nature by him not behaving in the same way. Okay, let's go on. I've got some other things I could say, but I know we're getting toward the end of the quarter, and I don't want us not to get finished. Let's see. Verses. I'm missing a couple pages there. Verses 8 through 10. Joanne, please.
By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for a city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God.
Okay, God came to Abraham and told him, he says, I want you to leave. What was he going to be leaving when he left? I mean, he's leaving a physical plot of ground, but what else was he leaving behind?
His family.
Now, and he did take his father-in-law. Was it father-in-law? Father? Amen. Peter, I guess that was his father. But other than that, we're not indicating, and Lot went with them. But other than that, the rest of their family, they left behind. That's where your safety was. I mean, we're not talking about a civilized world where there was police and armies and things and government to keep people safe. Or at least, you know, offer what safety government and police state can. Abraham was leaving a lot. And he was going to a land, he didn't know what that land was like. Was it land that he was going to personally possess?
He never possessed it.
He was doing this for those that would come after him, for his own seed. He wasn't doing it for him, for his own personal good. So I think that was something that was really selfless in him, because he was at a place that they would have had land and property that they owned. But he was willing to accept that God just says, you go. Did God even tell him where he was going right away? He said, You just go. I'm going to show you where to go. And so he ends up going to the land, eventually to the land of, he goes to Haran first, stays there a little bit. His father dies there. Then he moves on to the land of Canaan. It said he lived in the land of promise as in a foreign land. But then it gives kind of a commentary on that. What did he do that kind of showed he was not in a land that was at this point his own? What kind of place did he live? Tents. Temporary. If you move to a place and you're planning on being there for your lifetime, what typically do people do in this day and time?
Build a house.
Settle down. But that's not what he did. And the writer of Hebrews here is pointing that out. He lived as one that was living in a temporary place, even though God had promised that this was going to eventually belong to all of those that of his seed that came after him. And the reason it says in verse 10 that he was willing to do all this is that he was looking forward to a city whose foundations and designer and builder is God. So what was he looking? What was it that motivated him? He was wanting to go where?
Heaven.
Heaven. That was his motivation. Today, when we're called upon to do difficult things, that's got to be our motivation. We've got to hold on to that. We've got to think about heaven and the reward that's out there for us. God knows that's the way to motivate us, because that's the way he set things up in his word. I mean, he could have just motivated us by fear, but that's not what he chose to do. He does motivate us by fear, but he also motivates us by the fact that we will be rewarded. Okay, verses 11 and 12. Val?
By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child. When she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as the deed, were born as many as the stars in the sky, in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore.
Okay, do you remember when the angels, or I think they were angels, came to see Abraham and give him the news about the son that was going to be born, and Sarah overheard that? What was her first reaction?
She laughed.
Oh, what a joke. Oh, I can't believe that. But then she was... It was brought to her attention that some others knew she laughed. She said, oh, I didn't. But, oh, yes, you did. But this indicates that even though she laughed, what eventually did she do? She believed. And the implication there is, if she did not believe, would she have had that son?
No.
I think that's what Hebrews is telling us. She and Abraham both had to display faith in order to receive this son that was promised by God. It says some of the things that we know about the story. She was well beyond the age of normal childbearing. Remember, she was about, I believe it was 90 years old when Isaac was born. It says that because of her faithfulness, because of the faithfulness of Abraham, they received a child, and this led to a nation of people that were more numerous, or as numerous as the stars of heaven or the sands of the seashore. And of course, we know that's not literal, but yet it was just a very great number. What does it mean when it says Abraham is good as dead? What's it emphasizing about Abraham? How old?
He couldn't reproduce.
About 100. So it was either the fact that he couldn't have kids anymore, that he was too old. That could have been what it meant, or it meant that, he's 100 years old. That was kind of getting toward the end of man's normal lifespan at that point. And so he was almost dead. Now, Abraham lived another 20 or so years and ended up marrying another wife. And so Keturah, I believe it was. So he did have several other children eventually. But at the point where it seemed like there was no hope, God said, it's going to happen. And they both believed it. Because they believed it and were faithful to him, they received the promises. And the same offering is to us if we accept God's promises and obey. Yes?
They waited 25 years before the promise was fulfilled. The time between when God told him and Isaac was born was like 25 years.
Okay, when he was first called to leave the land, I think he even made allusion to that then. He was 75 years old. So you're right, that was 25 years. That's a long time to have a promise. And you're thinking then that, hey, we're of age, we need to have a son pretty soon. And we know that there's some things happened. Their faith kind of wavered a little bit. He tried to help God a little bit, and that didn't work out. I said, no, you're not going to be somebody else in your household. It's going to be somebody of your own blood lineage. And it's going to be through your wife, even. He got more specific, and through your wife, Sarah. And so that... Abraham did believe that, and he acted in faith, and that caused God to do for him what he promised. Okay, verses 13 through 16 there.
While these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country for which they went out, they would have the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them.
Abraham's mentioned, Sarah, Isaac. Jacob. It says all of these died in faith, not having received the things promised. Now, what are the things promised there? I mean, it's not the promise of Isaac, because Isaac's all he has been received.
The land and the people.
Okay, the land.
Nation.
The nation of people. And then eventually heaven itself, I think, are the promises that are referred to here. What does it mean when it says, but having seen them and greeted them from afar? What's that another definition for?
Of hope.
Of hope? Of faith. It's another way of saying faith. The fact that when God told them this is going to come to pass, to them it had already happened. It's kind of like sometimes in the Bible, God will speak of something in the future in past tense. Now God knows, I mean to him it has all, it has, but us taking on that same attitude, that is, being able to speak of something in the past tense even though it has not yet happened. That is kind of what it seems to be talking about here. Having seen them and greeted them from afar. It says having acknowledged they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus or this way make it clear they are seeking a homeland. How was it they were speaking of being exiles and living here temporarily? What is it that they were doing? Was it they were just going to tell everybody, I'm just here temporarily? Is that what he's talking about?
That's where their hope was.
Okay, their hope was in a permanent place. Their hope wasn't where they were. But this talks about, I don't think they were physically necessarily talking about saying, I'm not here permanently. What he's saying is, you know, sometimes we say your actions speak louder than words. Right? So the way they were behaving, the way they were trusting God, the way they were still worshiping God, even when their promises, like of a child, hadn't yet been received, they were showing that these things on earth were not what was most important to them. But yet they did trust God to do those things He promised, whether here on earth or whether in the future, in giving them heaven or even maybe even the future things on earth for their children.
Their faith was controlling them, really.
Okay. And other people, I'm sure, could see that. Could see that they didn't behave like the people around them. You know, when they didn't mistreat people in a way that, you know, maybe the rest of the world thought it was okay to do. Now Abraham made some mistakes. He told some lies he shouldn't have said. He wasn't perfect, but yet he acted differently than those that were around. Showing.
He never bought any land except to bury his people. They moved all the time. They were moving around. I mean, you know. It's like, you know, you go to a city, most of the time you're going to buy a house, you're going to settle down. He didn't. They moved, and then if there was trouble, they moved, and they moved. Went to Egypt, came back. I mean, they were moving around.
Okay.
And never
settled. Yeah. Never settled. Now, what does that say about, what does that typify of us? Continually, you know, not ever settling our minds so that we think this is all there is, that this is what it's all about, that we're completely satisfied here on earth.
I think as Americans, we do that a lot. This is our country. I mean, you know, we get real attached. I'm really patriotic, but I have to keep thinking this is my temporary home, you know.
Okay, we do. We have to remind ourselves. It talks about here what it said about them, you know, showing that or speaking, acknowledging that they were strangers and exiles. I think most of the time we do that by the way we behave, but also sometimes we have to tell ourselves. We may have to say, you know, Mel, you know, don't forget, this is not what it's all about. Just like you said, I mean, you know, I have conversations with myself. I tell myself sometimes, hey, Mel, you just can't do that. That's not the way you ought to think, or that's not the way you ought to behave. Or here's the way you ought to think.
That's the reason things probably aren't perfect for us, because we have to have trials and persecutions and tribulations to identify with them, you know, want to get out of this place.
Exactly. And that's really what chapter 12, I believe, is about, the discipline of the Lord. It talks about how important that is. In fact, I was talking to someone this morning. They related a story that that a grandchild had been mistreated at school over and over and over. And they went to school and tried to get something done about it. And nobody wanted to do anything about it. And finally told them, you know, you're going to do something about it. I'm going to the newspaper. I'm tired of this. And they disciplined the child. They didn't want to because the person had a lot of money and things. And, you know, the mother was called up there and she said, you paddle that kid right now. The mother of the child. And said, that kid now is one of the best kids because he was disciplined. That one time had to be shown that there was other authority. And we'll talk some more about that later, but didn't want to forget that example that was just mentioned to me even this morning. It says, if they'd been thinking of that land from which they'd gone out, they could have returned. So what he's saying is if Abraham had decided that, you know, he didn't want to be here in Canaan, he didn't want to follow God's promises, he had every opportunity. And all of these others that are mentioned as doing things in faith, they had opportunity to not look spiritually, to not look to the future. And if they'd chosen to, God wouldn't have made them behave.
Well, that's the same is true of Christians today. We can always go back into the world. I mean, there's nothing keeping us from it. It's our choice.
Okay, and it's pointed out here. This was a free choice these people made to stay faithful to God, to trust Him, because it says they desired a better country, a heavenly one. Now, because they stayed faithful, because they continued to believe and obey God, what was God's attitude toward them according to verse 16? He is not ashamed. I know all of us would never want the Lord to be ashamed of us, to think that you know, if we went somewhere and He was there and somebody asked Him about us and He just turned His back and wouldn't acknowledge He knew us. I mean, that's not the way He acted toward these people. He was glad to say, I know those. They're my people. You can tell by the way they act, the way they show their obedience to me. Okay, verses 17 through 19. Harold?
17 through 19. By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back.
One thing I really like about passages like this is sometimes we receive some insight that maybe you assume was true by reading the Old Testament story, but you don't know. You know, you don't know exactly what Abraham was thinking. Most of the Bible stories, it tells about what people did, but it doesn't necessarily tell what they were thinking exactly. And so the story here is when God told Abraham, he said, when Isaac was a young boy, we don't know, probably 8, 10 years old, something like that, 10, 12 maybe even, he said, I want you to go to Mount Moriah, and I want you to take your son and offer him to me. And so Abraham got things together. He made plans. Got up early in the morning, took some servants with him, and his son Isaac took some wood for the offering, and he took him to the place that God told him. He told the servants to stay there, and he and the boy would... what did he tell them? Y'all remember? Marcel, what did he tell them?
He said, the boy and I will return.
Okay. I mean, even in that, you know, I guess that could be implied, some of what Abraham was thinking. You know, he was sure whatever happened, whether he actually had to kill him or whether God stopped him. But Hebrews seems to indicate here that he wasn't considering that God was going to stop him from offering Isaac. He thought that God would just raise him from the dead, that once he showed that he was faithful. Why was he so sure about that? I mean, why wasn't he thinking, well, maybe he'll just give me somebody else? What had God told him about Isaac? He's the one. And so he was certain. He waited this 25 or so years and had a child when he was too old and Sarah was too old. So he was sure of God's promises and he acted faithfully. So he took him up there, he bound Isaac, and then he put the wood and he was fixing to offer Isaac with the knife. And just as he was about to plunge that into him, he was stopped. And God said, now I know. Could God not have known of Abraham's faith before that? I mean, God, he can know everything. Could, Could he could have known that? Sure he could have. But that's not what he wanted. He wanted to see it.
Abraham had a choice, just like we have a choice to become Christians and follow him. Abraham had a choice whether or not he was going to go follow through with it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Abraham that's being tested, not God.
Okay. And also, you know, many times we think, you know, if this happens to me, this is what I'm going to do. You ever said that? If that ever happens to me, that's what I'm going to do. Have you ever had that happen to you and you always did exactly what you thought you would? No, sometimes we do. But sometimes we don't do what we thought we would do. And sometimes we don't do it in a good way or a bad way. It can be either way. But God says, I want to see it displayed. You know, I want to see obedience in action. That's what is required to show biblical faith, saving faith. He considered that God was even able to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. So you might ask the question, did Abraham offer Isaac? I say yes, he did offer Isaac. I mean, he did everything he could do till he was stopped. I mean, in his mind, he was dead. And it was as if he received him back from the dead. He was so committed to doing what God told him to do.
This is maybe a silly way, but people used to throw up, you know, what if this man was on his way to be baptized and a tree falls on him and kills him? Well, he had made up his mind. He was on his way. He was doing it. And to me, he was in the same position of Abraham. He was doing it in faith, and as far as God was concerned, he had committed himself. It was done.
That's a good point. I never have heard it analyzed that way. Certainly, God has the right to do the way He wants. And so I feel like you know, in my own limited thoughts that he would accept that, but I can't say for sure. We can't whittle on his end, but that's a good example of how he took something that he really didn't get finished. He accepted that, but certainly we want to use that to encourage somebody. You don't have to worry. You know, God's going to accept if you don't make it. You know, we always want to encourage them to do something once they know that they should respond, that they should do it immediately, but not knowing, you know, what will happen.
I guess my question there is that the only opportunity that guy ever had?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm glad I had got to make that decision.
I don't want to put myself or my children, you know, in that situation. But but yet I certainly would not stand and say I know they're condemned. I don't want that's not my job or any of our jobs. But that does it is an interesting question or something for us to think about. Okay, let's go on to verse 22. Let's see, Marcel, is it you?
20 through 22. Okay. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones.
Okay. You remember when Isaac blessed his children? I think probably here it's referring to really, when Jacob supplanted his brother Esau and received the blessings that were supposedly for the older son. But it says here that he did this through faith. How was this? And it's mentioned in the two together. And I'm not sure I know exactly how to explain that. But, you know, first he does it. He finds out he was tricked. But he doesn't change it, you know. And then later Esau comes in and he asks for the blessing, and his father said, I'm sorry, but it's all gone. Someone was here before you and it wasn't you. I was tricked and I can't change it. Why couldn't he change it? He was really prophesying at that point. This was not something he was deciding to do. Whose word was he showing or giving? He was giving God's word of what was going to happen to these boys. This was not just Isaac just making this up. And I think in that sense, he received this from God and accepted it as truth, as what God wanted. And so he was not willing to try to change it, because even if he changed it, it wouldn't matter, because this is what God had said was going to happen. So in that sense, I think that's the way he showed faith in accepting what God said about the difference in his two boys. Then it says, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And what in the blessings that they received, what did they get? You remember what special they got?
Double portion.
Well, Joseph got a double portion through these two boys. Each one got a single portion, which was the double portion. You're right. So he was prophesying about them, you know, receiving the land. So number one, he was saying, I believe we're going to get out of Egypt. They were not at a point where it looked like they were going to be able to depart from Egypt at this point in his life. But yet he had been promised it, and he knew it was going to happen eventually. And so these promises, these blessings were put upon these sons. Joseph, when he died.
That was the reason they had the half tribe, wasn't it? Ephraim and Manasseh.
Some of them stayed on the east side, and most of them.
Yeah, that was because of the way they, some of them didn't cross.
Didn't go and fight.
They did go fight, but they just said, we'll fight. We're not trying to get out of fight. We just want some land over here because we like it better. That's how they were divided up. Thank you, Marcel, for reminding me. But Joseph, at the end of his life, he says, take my bones when you leave Egypt. So what was he saying by the fact that he makes this statement? What did he believe?
They would leave Egypt.
They're going to leave Egypt eventually. This we will be a great nation, and we will receive the promise that God made about the land in the land of Canaan. And so it meant so much to him that he wanted to make sure that they didn't leave him behind in Egypt. He wanted his bones to be in the promised land. All right, verse 23. Susan?
By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment.
Okay, one more verse. I'm sorry. Let's read on through.
Sorry.
Let me see what verse I wanted to go through. I meant to go through 28. Read through 28. Through 28. Go ahead through verse 28.
By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them.
Okay, several things we see in the story of Moses. We all know the story of Moses. It was at a time when the king was having them kill all the young Israelite males, and they had been commanded to do that, and Moses' parents didn't do that like they were commanded. They weren't afraid of the king, it says. They were willing to hide their baby, and so did this for a little while. Then the king's daughter found him, adopted him, you might say, and Moses' mother became his nursemaid. But it says, when Moses was grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, but was rather willing to be mistreated with the people of God. So Moses was in a place of luxury. He would have probably received certainly some power and would have been a prince. But yet he was not willing to accept that. He would rather suffer with God's people. And how did he first show that? Do you remember what he did?
They were fighting, I think, and he took one Egyptian.
Killed the Egyptian that was striking
the Israelite.
The Israelite. And so once it was found out that was known, he left because he was afraid of the king at that point and was gone for about 40 years, and then God brought him back later to be the leader of the Israelites. So he chose to be mistreated with God's people. Probably that's in reference. He made that choice, I guess, early on when he left Egypt. But then when he came back, he was there with the Israelites when he was trying to get Pharaoh to eventually let them leave, and brought the plagues upon them. It says, he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. What is the reproach of... How is he associated with the reproach of Christ? I mean, these... It's another 600 or 800 years.
He knew that his people had been, were suffering, and that they were God's people. That's as far as I can take.
Okay, I think it was good. He was taking part in God's plan to bring apart, to bring about the Christ eventually. I think that's maybe what's being referred to here. But he was willing to do that. And the reason he was willing is because he saw something much more valuable, much greater in the future, and that is the reward of heaven and being with God forever. Then it says in verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing he who is invisible. He left Egypt. I believe this is the second time. This is when he's leaving with the children of Israel. You know, he keeps giving these, bringing these plagues, or delivering the fact that they're going to be brought upon them from God. That happens. The king keeps changing his mind. Finally, the king says, go. He's not afraid to go. He's following God's instructions. And so he leaves. Now, before they leave, though, it does comment on something that took place, that it says, by faith, he kept the Passover. The Passover, God had instructed them that they were to kill a lamb. They were to take the blood and put it on their doorposts. What was this supposed to do for them?
Save the firstborn.
Was
that just the son, or was it a daughter, or did it matter?
I think it just says the firstborn. When it went to the Egyptians, my recollection is that not only was it in their household, I think it was not only the people, but even the animals and things that were the firstborn. And it didn't do that to the Israelites, obviously, because they put the blood there. It was something that was very horrible to the Egyptians. I mean, at that point, they said, get these people out of here. You know, we don't want to have anything to do with them. But we know from the story, it didn't take but a few days. They were on their way, and they changed their mind. The king said, we can't live without them. You know, we've got to have these people do our work. We don't know how to work. And so he sent them after, sent the army after them as they came to the Red Sea. And that didn't work out too well for the Egyptians, but it did work out well for the Israelites.
Now that would have been the first saving of the firstborn, would it not? Wouldn't that have been the initial miracle concerning that? Or is there something else that I don't know about?
I'm not sure I know what you're referring to.
Well, I'm just saying, if that was the first time that this was accomplished by God, that was a tremendous...
This was not something he was familiar Moses was familiar with. In other words, it had happened before, and he's going, "Oh yeah, that's what works." You know, it's just put the blood up here. No, this was. There's no indication that God had ever made a command like this before. So, I think that's probably implied in the fact that it says he did it by faith. You know, God said, "Here's what's going to happen." You know, and you better put this blood up here, or you know, this is what's going to happen to you. And he did do it.